This is a Triple J podcast.
Every billionaire is a douchebag.
Parliament is a sick place.
I thought, oh my God, I might be an alcoholic. Obviously, I'm an inadequate guest.
No, that's not what I'm saying.
Who's the Prime Minister?
Anyone else really into birds? I mean, I'm not a fanatic, but I have noticed a lot of mates, people on socials seem to be getting around twitching or bird watching lately. Even footy players have come out saying, I love birds and I'm not ashamed of it. So what is behind this spike in popularity? G'day, it's Dave Marchese with you for Hack. Coming up, you're going to hear what got some Australians into this very old school hobby.
I just remember thinking, like, that's incredible. Like, that looks like it could be on, like, a David Attenborough documentary or something. And I just didn't even realise that was kind of in the backyard.
Yeah, if you can relate to this, if you're also into bird watching, get in touch. Tell me why. And if you are out and proud as a bird person, 0439 757 555. Also coming up, could we see a new political party of teal independence? Because David Pocock was asked about it on the weekend, did not rule it out. We'll get into that first, though.
Hack.
Several Australian activists who were detained by Israel have touched down at Sydney Airport.
On Triple J.
Yeah, we're going to get into some disturbing allegations first, and a warning, we are about to speak about sexual abuse, because a group of Australian activists who were detained by Israel while trying to reach Gaza has arrived home. Now, Israel deported more than 400 flotilla detainees after a global outcry over their treatment in custody. And you might remember last week on Hack, we spoke about the Australian government condemning the actions of one Israeli minister in particular who was filmed taunting the detained activists. Well, more allegations are being made by those Aussies who've been returning home, and we've actually got one with us now. Gemma O'Toole was the first Australian to get back last night, and she's with us. Gemma, thank you so much for joining us on Hack.
No worries. Thank you so much for having me.
Firstly, a lot of Australians would want to know, how does it feel to be back in Australia?
It feels really good to be home. This country is incredibly special, incredibly beautiful. Yeah, I think just trying to, like, adjust to something that will take a really long time to adjust to.
Yeah, you said to the media last night that it's going to take you a while to come to terms with what's happened and everything you've seen. I mean, are you able to take us through what transpired when your boat was intercepted by Israeli forces? What happened then?
We were held at gunpoint and then kidnapped and put on a speedboat to a warship where we were held in like a concentration camp on a boat for a few days. No toilet paper, not enough water. Can't believe I was looking forward to getting off that boat and onto land. And then went through the immigration where you saw the Ben-Gavir sort of stuff. And then into 24 hours of Israeli prison, which was, I cannot actually explain in words how horrendous that was. Was beaten, had handcuffs on, and my ankles shackled, but had handcuffs on for 22 out of 24 hours, was not allowed to sleep, was the lights were kept on. So many of the women around me were sexually assaulted. I was sexually assaulted on the prison boat. A lot of women were sexually assaulted in prison. People were taken photos of without their clothes on. I was punched in the head repeatedly, kicked in the back of the legs. I think I may have nerve damage to my neck. I have to go to the hospital probably tomorrow and work out what's going on there. But yeah, I don't really know what to say because it's hard to distill 4 days of torture. But I got nowhere near the worst treatment. Like, I have friends with broken sternums and collapsed lungs, broken legs. You know, they beat the elderly. They focused on gender and racial minority people. They got the worst of it by far.
I mean, these are really serious physical injuries that you're describing, and also mental injuries. To have the IDF reject all abuse allegations, I mean, they've given a statement to the ABC saying that they had their orders to require respectful and appropriate treatment of flotilla participants, and there are clear and established procedures, and for the ambassador to Australia to say that no one was hurt and the interception went smoothly. How does that make you feel?
Well, I think, I mean, the IDF is famously lies. We're talking about no injuries. Like, Syria has broken ribs. I don't know why we're talking about no injuries. They're all, nearly all, pretty sure, mate, I think definitely nearly all of the Australian women who went were sexually assaulted.
And to be clear, you know, when you talk about sexual assault, are you talking about rape in terms of stuff that happened to some of these?
Yeah, flotilla participants were raped last week.
That includes Australians?
I'm not going to comment. I'm going to wait for people's stories to come out. I'm not going to comment on, I guess, I wasn't raped. I really thought I was going to. I was told repeatedly that I would be. I don't know what exactly, because it's been a few days, what the other Australian women went through. I know that women from other countries were raped.
But there were threats. You received threats from... Yeah. What was going through your mind?
I mean, I think you just like shut off and get into like the mode of being able to get through. And I honestly just like take a lot of inspiration from like the Palestinian people who have been under occupation for 78 years, who continue to remain sumud, like steadfast in their fight for liberation, and know that what's happening to me is this tiny amount of what's been happening to these indigenous peoples for decades and decades. And I think it's like, that's what gets you through. Cause like on the wall of my cell were men from Gaza were writing about, you know, I've been in here for 10 years. All I want to do is get out and see my children. Like I was thinking about that. Like I was getting threatened with rape and I was getting groped and I was getting beaten. I was just thinking about the Palestinian people and I feel honestly incredibly heartbroken. I just feel so sad. Like I think the trauma will take a long time to work through. I can't say that I will definitely ever work through what's just happened, but this may be a turning point. The world needs to really start paying attention to what's happening, because this can't go on.
Like I said, you know, there is rejection of these accusations of abuse coming from Israel, but then there are others who are saying that flotilla participants are lying. How does that make you feel, being called a liar?
I mean, there are worse things to be called. And it's also like, I feel like it's like such small fish right now. Like I'm 23. I just got home from 4 days of torture. People can call me absolutely whatever they, you know, honestly, whatever they want. Like I'm just, I feel so lucky to be home with my mum and my family.
You would have seen while you were away, the Australian government did condemn Israel for its treatment of the flotilla participants. I'm wondering what you do think of the government's response to this.
Completely piecemeal and inadequate. And I demand a meeting, along with everyone else who's come back from Australia, demand a meeting with the Prime Minister.
Do you think you'll get it?
I think we're absolutely owed it. Like I felt entirely unsupported by my government, and I had absolutely no faith in the Australian government doing anything to protect me when I was in there.
Do you regret going at all, Gemma?
It's hard to say right now, because there have been a lot of feelings that have been coming up, where the immediate feelings right after, I think, are like absolutely, because it was hell on earth for days and I thought I was going to die. But no, because like Palestine is the compass of the world. And I do believe that Palestine will free the world. Like, it's so important. And I think that the more and more people wake up and see that, the more important that is. And I think if it takes people who look like you from where you are from going and doing things to make it seem more real, it's really important.
Gemma O'Toole, really appreciate you speaking with us. Thanks for coming on Hack.
Thank you so much. It was really, really nice.
And we did put Gemma's specific allegations to the Prime Minister's office. They pointed us to this answer that he gave in a press conference today.
Look, I'm not going to respond without any notice for someone I don't know. I don't know their circumstances. But what I would say very clearly is that the government made our position very clear. People who have a look at the way that people were treated isn't consistent with how we want Australians, but I go further than that, how we want anyone treated.
We also heard from the Department of Foreign Affairs, a spokesperson telling Hack that it is alarmed by individual allegations of mistreatment of Australians while in detention, and Australia has made representations to Israel about these allegations. Hack also reached out to the Israel Defence Forces about Gemma's allegations this afternoon, and the IDF did respond to Hack, rejecting allegations of abuse, saying no specific incidents of deviation from binding procedures are known, and that any concrete complaints submitted to the IDF will be examined thoroughly.
Hack. The ABC has confirmed several so-called teal independents are in talks about forming a new political party. On Triple J.
Yeah, could the teals get together to start a new political party? A big conversation happening over the past 24 hours after some polling over the weekend suggested One Nation is set to obliterate the federal opposition, overtake the coalition as the main opposition party in Australia if an election was held today. So how realistic is this? Shannon Schubert's been looking into it.
I think we need to build a stronger movement and a bigger movement, whatever shape that takes.
Could there be a new political party brewing? After speculation started over the weekend, New South Wales MP Allegra Spender confirmed today that she has been talking to other Teals and Independents about joining forces.
I do worry about sort of Western Australia, South Australia, places where there is no effective opposition because of the hollowing out of the centre. My view on this is that you need to meet the moment, whether it's an evolution, whether it's a party, whether it's just working together differently.
One of the MPs she's talking to, who says she is open to the idea, is member for Warringah, Zali Steggall.
I'm really worried about where Australia is at. It's really easy to be divided. The clickbait, polarisation of often the right wing to get people angry and blaming, but that does not provide any solutions.
For the former Olympian who took former PM Tony Abbott's seat, the rise of One Nation is a key motivator for considering a new party.
How do we evolve and build more consensus to enable more communities to benefit from choice? There has to be an alternative choice from the major parties.
Senator David Pocock is also open to the idea.
Yeah, there's plenty of conversations going on all the time. I mean, this is something...
And you're open to this?
Yeah, I'm always happy to chat about the future of our country.
So are all the so-called Teal Independents on board? Well, not quite. Mackellar MP Sophie Scamp said she'd consider it. But Independent Victorian MP Monique Ryan and WA's Kate Chaney have ruled themselves out of the hypothetical new party, along with four other independents in the lower house. Kate Chaney said she liked finding unlikely crossbench allies to drive policy change.
I think we can continue to work constructively and improve, you know, our effectiveness and our efficiency even more without having to actually form a political party.
Member for Indi, Helen Haynes, also said no thanks.
I mean, let a thousand blossoms bloom. If people want to talk about forming more formal allegiances through a party, go your hardest.
It comes as new polling shows the rising popularity of One Nation could see the minor far-right party become the main opposition. It showed if an election was held now, One Nation could win between 46 and 59 seats in the lower house. Analysts say it's a snapshot of voter intentions rather than a prediction of the next election result. But if it was reflected at the next election, it would be a staggering result for a party that has never won a lower house seat at a general election. One Nation MP Barnaby Joyce said the party would not get ahead of itself.
What's before us is an incredible responsibility placed on us by the Australian people. We'll rise to that responsibility, but we're not going to get carried away with may or may not be down the track.
Opposition leader Angus Taylor dismissed the threat and insisted the Liberal and National parties are providing a credible alternative to Labor.
We are the one party or coalition that is fighting the Labor Party every day. If people want to support a party or coalition that fights the Labor Party, support the Liberal and National parties, because that's our fight.
Former Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull says the so-called Teal MPs have an opportunity to fill a hole in the centre of Australian politics created by the Liberals.
The more the Liberal Party tries to chase and emulate and copy One Nation, the more it builds up the vote for One Nation.
So how likely is it that there will be a new political party in federal politics? Well, MP Allegra Spender says at this stage, it's just talks.
If there's appetite, it will grow. If it's not, it won't.
Hack on Triple J.
Shannon Schubert reporting there. Look, let's get into some of these polling results a bit more with Cos Samaras now, who's the director at Redbridge, which is the polling agency that did that research that came out over the weekend showing growing One Nation popularity. G'day, Cos. Thanks for joining us on Hack.
No problem.
One Nation, 59 seats if an election was held today. What does that mean? Is Pauline Hanson going to obliterate the opposition?
As it stands today, yes. And look, it's a reflection of the federal polling numbers that we've seen now for the last 4 to 5 months. One Nation's polling consistently in the high 20s. No one's really had a look at, okay, so then what does it actually look like at a seat-based level? And sure enough, if you're polling in the high 20s as an average, you're obviously polling in excess of 40 somewhere, and in somewhere being mean many seats. And of course, what we do know about the demographic profile of the One Nation vote, it's largely in regional Australia. And so it's no surprise to us that when we did this analysis, that it's ended up being quite a strong result for them in regional Australia.
So, Cos, is this a massive shift to the right, or is it something else here that we're seeing?
It's anti-establishment. There is some people would like to characterise it as a shift to the right. I would like to just define it as a bunch of Australians sick of the two-party system. If you look at the types of people that have moved over to One Nation, they're overwhelmingly working class regional Australians. And then you look at their personal stories, they overwhelmingly experienced severe economic decline over the last 20 years. So we could see that, we can see why this has happened. And it's really about sick of the system rather than actually moving to a particular ideological direction or not.
How worried would you be if you were Angus Taylor right now?
Yeah, well, he loses his seat quite comfortably to One Nation. And look, we've seen the polls result in the South Australian state election, where One Nation did put very well, the Furrow by-election. Nothing's occurring right now at the ballot box so far. It surprises us in terms of where One Nation could possibly end up come 2028. So unless something drastically changes, Angus Taylor should be incredibly worried.
Interesting. This is Hack. I'm Dave Marchese. I'm speaking with Cos Samaras from Redbridge. We're talking about these polling numbers that put One Nation in a very healthy position if an election was held today. They would become the official opposition if that was to happen. We're also talking about these calls for the Teals to maybe get together and start their own political party. Because if that happened, what do you reckon it would mean for Australian politics? Do you think it would be a big threat?
Well, it would, again, give Australians more options. There is a hunger out there for something alternative that is, well, the adult in the room that is not One Nation. And so I would say that at the moment, the brand that the Teal Independents offer is that sort of centre-right, centre-left, socially progressive, economically moderate, you know, sort of political offering. That's missing from the political conversation right now across the country because the Liberal Party's moved so far over to the right and chasing that One Nation vote. They've completely abandoned that territory, and so there's a vacuum to be filled.
Do you reckon they would lose some of their appeal if they stop being independents, if they join together as a party?
Yeah, look, when we speak to Australians who voted for the Teal Independents in 2022 and then re-elected them in 2025, most of these Australians are quite worried about the long-term viability of this Teal Independent movement. They understand that, yes, it's there as long as those independent MPs are incumbents, but then passing the baton to the next generation is going to be pretty difficult. And, of course, what they're really worried about is the direction of the country. And so I really do think there is a vacuum there to be filled.
Interesting stuff. Cos Samaras from Redbridge, really appreciate you coming on Hack.
No problem at all. Thank you.
We got a lot of messages coming through on this. Someone says, isn't it funny how all the sports people turned politicians who are used to abiding by integrity rules are the ones that are speaking sense and actually making a difference in politics, that person saying. Another person saying, it's so disappointing that so many Australians who are sick of the two-party status quo would never consider voting for the Greens, that person says. Another person saying, isn't this kind of the same idea that Charlotte Mortlock was talking about on your show a couple of weeks ago? Similar, I guess. Charlotte saying she wants to start a new political movement and potentially a party that is offering Australians something different. And another person saying Pauline doesn't want the responsibility, just the power, is that person's opinion there. All right, we're going to move on.
Hack.
It's definitely taking off, I think, with a younger audience, which is so good to see. And it's very exciting for us birders.
On Triple J.
What was the last bird you remember seeing? Kind of weird question. I know, but it is a question that made the world fall in love with Robert Irwin last year. Also, one people are asking more and more because, I don't know if you've noticed, but the popularity of bird watching is booming at the moment and it is being driven by young people. It's something that Jackson Worthington decided he wanted to look into.
I just remember thinking, like, that's incredible. Like, that looks like it could be on, like, a David Attenborough documentary or something. And I just didn't even realise that was kind of in the backyard.
Jonah's been into birds for more than half his life. It all started when his grandma gave him a copy of the Birds of Australia field guide for Christmas.
Just thought, like, that's pretty cool how many different types of birds there are that you can tick off.
But an encounter with a pretty common Aussie bird is what really got him hooked.
People often talk about this as, like their spark bird.
Jonah was taking photos in his backyard when he came across a silver eye.
Which is like a little kind of grey and green bird, very small, kind of would fit in the palm of your hand. It's got a little white ring around the eye.
Right now, Jonah's on a mission to see every species of owl and kingfisher found in Australia.
I love kingfishers. I think they're one of the coolest species, coolest family of birds that there are. They're so beautiful and colourful and yet can be quite kind of enigmatic, like hard to see around, but they're there if you look hard enough.
And he's not the only one excited about birds. Birdwatching is booming in popularity around the world right now. A recent survey from the Royal Society for the Protection of Birds in the UK found there had been a tenfold increase in the number of 16 to 29-year-olds who regularly enjoy birdwatching since 2018. Jonah reckons more young people in Australia are getting involved too.
Like, it's really funny. Like, I always thought birdwatchers were just kind of old people in cargo gear with massive cameras and scopes and binoculars. It probably wasn't until I started kind of posting on social media about birdwatching more that I realised that there's actually a lot of young people who are really curious about birds.
They go like, yeah, you know, normally people get into hit their 30s and they're like, right, okay, it's time to get into birdwatching, but we're starting off early.
Yana's in her 20s and she recently got into birdwatching.
I think in our current times, unfortunately, it's very easy to get sucked into having embarrassingly long screen time. And I found that I really just wanted more of a reason to get outside.
Like Jonah, she has a strong memory of her spark bird. So strong, in fact, she got it tattooed on her.
I was standing on a rock wall and the sky was really dark. It was literally just about to storm. And these two great cormorants flew really, really low right in front of me, just across above that rock wall and just off into the distance. And I'll just never forget that moment. Their silhouette, it was so graceful but powerful.
Yana founded a group for queer birders last year.
It started off as a joke among a small group of my friends. I had decided that birdwatching would be my next hobby. I was tired of the fact that I felt like I didn't really have many people to go with.
She says more than 20 people showed up for their first walk, despite it being at 7 a.m.
Which I was really surprised by. Yeah, I just wasn't expecting that so many young queer people also were into it or wanting to be into it.
Hack on Triple J.
Jackson Worthington reporting there. This is so wholesome, and so wholesome are the messages coming through on the text line now. Someone saying, it's like treasure hunting. We lost almost all our native birds 6 years ago in a bushfire. Now we have them all back, that person says. Such good news. Someone else saying, I reckon bird spotting's on the rise since Pam the graffiti bird in Melbourne. I spent a lot of my time looking for that bird and now I just look at the real ones instead of the graffiti ones. Okay, interesting link that you've made there, someone from Melbourne. Another person, Annie, saying, I'm an ecologist and absolutely love that people are getting into bird watching. You can't value what you don't know about. And someone else saying, I got into twitching after my 75-year-old father-in-law came to visit us and did only bird watching the entire holiday. He taught me so much. Now I appreciate it so much more. The birds in their natural state and environment bring me so much joy. Well, look, it's actually funny we're talking about this today because we got the results of Australia's big annual bird count today. It happens every 12 months and every day people get involved. And apparently it was a record 5 million birds that were counted in this survey that happened last year. It's all organised by BirdLife Australia. And Sean Dooley is with BirdLife Australia and joins us now. G'day, Sean. Thanks for joining us on Hack.
Thanks for having us, Dave.
Were there any surprises in the results from last year?
Yeah, I think one of the birds, the notorious common miner or Indian miner, as people know it, when we started in 2014, it was a regular in the top 10, sort of usually placing 6th, 7th, 8th, something like that every year. Over the years, it's been dropping down, and in 2019, it actually dropped out of the top 10 altogether.
Right.
And so we're thinking, that's interesting because people love to hate this bird.
Yeah.
But then last year, it jumped back into the top 10.
Yeah.
So we will need to get results from next year to see if this is a trend or just a one-off anomaly.
What's the most common bird?
The most common bird in terms of who sees them is the magpie, the Australian magpie. Across Australia, basically one in two of our Aussie bird counts included a magpie. But that wasn't the most numerous bird. So while 50% of people who do a survey will see a magpie, the highest count was actually the rainbow lorikeet.
Wow.
But they're not seen as often. It's just when they are seen, they're often in bigger flocks.
Are there changes that you've seen in terms of where birds are found? Like, are birds adapting differently to environments, that kind of thing?
Yeah, I think a couple of the species that are rising up the league tables year on year, the common denominator there is that they tend to be species that were originally found inland. And that includes the ibis, the infamous bin chicken,
yeah,
the Australian white ibis. These birds were all basically inland. And because of how we've changed the landscape, these birds have become essentially climate refugees, and they've come to the coast, and then they've discovered, okay, there's food on along the coastline, but also, hang on, there's food in the cities too.
Yeah.
There are more and more ibis successfully surviving, if not thriving, in our cities.
The ultimate urban bird now, the exactly. ibis, I guess. Yeah. I mean, why do you think it is, Sean, that bird watching is getting so popular among young people? Because we heard before from a lot of young Australians who are saying, I love to do this. Is it heartening for you to see this kind of spike in interest?
Yeah, yeah. As a little junior bird nerd from the age of 10, that was okay in my primary school. But as soon as I went to high school, I went to a private boys' school. I got a scholarship there and didn't know anybody. And I got outed on the first day by the sadist of a form teacher.
No.
He said, Sean's a bird watcher, everybody. And I was like, oh, that was social death. And so going through that and knowing that it was so uncool to admit you liked birds, compare it to now where it's just taking off, and it is taking off in that 20-something, 30-something age group. It's fabulous to see, and it's almost, I don't quite know how to process it. I've got cognitive dissonance because birdwatching is almost cool and all sorts of people are getting into it. In fact, I hope he doesn't mind me outing him again, but I just spent this morning doing a bird walk with an NRL player.
Mitch Kenny.
And and I was saying, so how do the other blokes think about your bird watching? He said, even for me, it was a bit of irony. It's like, I like birds, but in, kind of in almost ironic, he picked up from his brother who was really into it. He said, but I started going out with him and loved it. And now the blokes in the team, they kind of make fun of it, but they actually really dig it. And they come in now and they say, hey, mate, I've seen this bird. What do you reckon it is?
That's really funny because yeah. I saw earlier this year Mitch speak about why he loves it. And, you know, the fact that he does talk to his footy mates about it as well. Why would you encourage people to maybe get into something like bird watching?
Well, you know, I'm biased.
apart from it being inherently cool, as you said.
Yeah. I mean, they are wonderful, inspiring creatures. And what I've seen over the years is that people connect with birds through different ways. It might be their song. There's a lot of musicians who come to bird watching through just that appreciation of the sound, the vocalizations, the tunes they make. Photography has had a big influence on the amount of people who are into birds. The rise of digital cameras in particular, and that I think has fed in to this recent surge. Now that their short form video is really common on social media, so many people are just sharing stuff that they see, and it's just put a few beautiful photos with a great soundtrack, and it's just rocking.
It works. Yeah. It works. Well, look, it's so lovely to see your passion and also the passion of so many listeners as well who get around bird watching and really count on this activity as something that keeps their mental health in check and something that keeps them pretty grounded as well. So thank you so much for joining us, Sean Dooley from BirdLife Australia. Really appreciate your time.
Oh, thanks, Dave.
And so many bird watchers, fanatics on the text line right now. Someone's saying, I got into bird watching after reading Sean's book, actually, which is really nice to hear. Another person saying bird watching is Pokemon Go of 2026, maybe. Someone else saying, I love participating in the bird count. Cricket training is a great place to count. Ashley on Bundjalung Country saying, I've always been into bird life courtesy of my dad. The bird book was always open in our household. My latest fascination is the local black-necked stork. Okay, very specific example there. And other people talking about which birds they like. Someone saying, I've had a young magpie eat from my hands. It almost made me cry when it happened. Another person saying, my sister says that bird watching is like Pokemon for adults. There's a few people saying very similar things there. And another person saying, I love bird watching because wherever you travel, there's always some wacky bird up to shenanigans. It's universal. Also getting messages through on our earlier interview with Gemma, who was one of the flotilla members who has arrived back in Australia yesterday and has some really hectic allegations that she's levelled at Israeli authorities. Someone saying, absolutely unacceptable. Well done for speaking out. Another person saying, I fully support the flotilla participants, but I don't think our government should be expected to bail them out when they choose to ignore our government's advice. All right, so that is all we've got time for on Hack for now.